Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast.
For product managers and innovators.
Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level. For the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. This podcast is about helping product managers and innovators become product masters. The interview today will provide training to help you with that, and I also provide online training for becoming a product master. Check out how you can become a product master using my free Product Mastery Roadmap at the same place where you'll find the show notes for this episode, and that place is theeverydayinnovator.com/099. Have you ever wondered why some people earn attention and respect when they speak and others don't? According to my guest, the secret to their success can be summed up in one word, gravitas. With gravitas, you can express yourself clearly and with the passion and confidence to persuade, influence, and engage listeners. And that is exactly a capability product managers and innovators need. My guest is Caroline Greuter, who has worked for many years as a voice teacher at the Central School of Speech and Drama in London. She spent the last decade developing a system to help her non-acting clients perform with poise, presence, and power. And she's been named one of Britain's top coaches. Her passion is helping people from all walks of life sound and feel their best. On her website, she has short courses available for purchase, but she's offering two of the courses to us, Everyday Innovators, for free. To find out how to get those courses, go to the show notes at theeverydayinnovator.com/099. On to the interview. Caroline, thank you so much for joining me and the Everyday Innovators.
Hi, Chad. It's great to be here.
I just want to dive into the topic and then I'll provide a little background here. You speak and teach on the topic of gravitas. And can you just define what that is and how that helps someone be successful?
It's a good question because about 10 years ago, I was asked to go into big telecom in London, where I work mostly. And they said, can you teach our engineers to have more gravitas? And being an entrepreneurial kind of woman, I said yes. And then I went home and I thought, I kind of know what that means, but I'm not 100% sure. So I spent about 3 weeks in a place called the London Library, which is up by St. James, and it's a wonderful place, surrounded by a pile of classical books. And I've started to find out what the ancient writers were saying about gravitas. Gravitas, in a nutshell, means dignity, presence, influence, seriousness, and it was a Roman virtue. And in the modern world, what it really means is that you have weight, that people take what you say seriously, that they listen to you, that your words have impact. And what's interesting for these engineers that I was teaching is that we assume that some people have it and some people don't. And my belief is that we all have some of it. Now, I'm never going to be a Obama. You know, perhaps in my next life, if I'm very, very good in this one, but I can have the right amount of gravitas for me in what I do. And I think everybody has the capacity to have enough if we know how to switch it on. And so my work is about helping people switch it on in whatever level they want to have it, bearing in mind that the people who are already stepping into big political shoes don't need my work, but the person who's presenting or pitching or doing an interview on TV might need it.
Okay. So when I think of just the word gravitas, and I appreciate you describing, you know, the dignity, presence, influence, being able to speak in a way that your words have weight, right? I also kind of think of swagger, right? If I just hear the word gravitas and, you know, swagger, how someone carries themselves and kind of just this presence they create when they enter a room. The way you described it sounds more focused on the words aspect, how we actually present our words and interact with other people. Is there a swagger dimension of this also, or is this different?
That's fascinating because my background is theater, words for me are physical. So a really big belief of actors is that words are physical. So yes, I really buy into swagger. I think swagger is a big part of it. And the ability to physically ground oneself is a really key part of this. The weight of your words comes from your weight, your presence in the room, and your awareness of your own emotional and physical state.
Okay, so we should not disconnect those two things. We
We want swagger, definitely.
Okay, so our speech should go with our words. And this is very interesting to me talking with you. I did share this with you before. I started this podcast now almost 2 years ago, which was a really incredibly frightening thing for me to take on in the beginning. And I did it because I was off traveling around the United States, interviewing people in person involved in innovation and product management and collecting those stories, and got back home and kind of missed the interactions. And so I thought, well, how can I continue doing this in a relatively, straightforward way that doesn't consume all my time writing up these stories like I was before? And so I thought the podcast would be good. Well, I, as a kid, was in speech therapy for 5 years of my life. Yeah. And I still, my family's very kind to me, but I still mispronounce words. So I'm one of those guys that hear the syllables in the backwards order, right? So,
When
I hear new words, I have to really have someone break them down for me syllable by syllable until I get them in the right order. And so this whole idea of how do we communicate with presence in an authentic way and with influence, personally took me a long time to even warm up to, just because of my previous difficulties dealing with basic speech, right? And I shared this in part because I suspect that you have worked with people who also think they could never, in some sort of situation, have the influence that in their mind they would like to have, but they've got there. Can you just address that, how you maybe have seen some transformations in people?
Well, so the first example I want to go back to is Demosthenes, which is a very ancient example, and he wasn't one of my clients. I'm not that old. But he was the famous Greek orator who initially spoke at the assembly and was pretty much booed off the stage and retreated to his house and was completely devastated because he hadn't done a very good job. And he was told by an actor, it's always an actor, isn't it, that his speech had had value, but he hadn't said it well enough. He hadn't had enough energy. He hadn't been clear enough. And the story goes that he went back and he practiced and he put pebbles in his mouth to make him speak more clearly. Mm. And he ran up and down hills, pulling rocks, saying his speech. And he even shaved half his head so he couldn't leave his house for weeks. So he had to practice his speech. And all this was very Hollywood in the sense that he went back to the assembly and he got an adoring crowd and it all went brilliantly and he goes down in history. But I think this is a good metaphor for the fact that if we want gravitas and influence in life, we shouldn't assume that it's a birthright of people, that actually everybody works for it. Some people have, someone like Obama perhaps has, we assume, more natural talent. But in fact, I was told that at Harvard, he was told he should never be a politician because his rhetoric wasn't up to speed.
Is that interesting?
So I think it's interesting. Whether it's true or not, who knows? But I think I've personally coached many clients who have come to me saying, I can't do this. I don't have enough charisma. I don't have enough presence. My voice shakes when I speak. I get panic attacks. Or, I haven't slept for a month because I have to make this speech. And what I say to all of them is, if you can have a conversation with a friend, you can make a speech. It's just understanding the physiology and the psychology of standing in the spotlight. And that is something that all of us can learn.
And of those examples, you were kind of talking through the specifics where we run into this. For me, it's often, I think for other product managers and innovators too, it's often that uncomfortable situation that at least I view as uncomfortable, where you're having to present a contrary opinion. And it's particularly uncomfortable if you're in the meeting situation and it's a supervisor, manager, senior leader, and you're having to try to address their position, which you believe is inaccurate based on the research you have. Because we may, as product managers, may have done customer and market research and we have different insights and we have to enter into that, right? And this comes under the heading, there was a study done earlier this year that addressed characteristics of product managers and their skills they have. And it identified four specific skills that lead product managers to faster career growth. And also in the study results, 25% greater salary, right? So they get paid 25% more. So these tend to be pretty powerful tools then. And I'll just tell you them real quick. The pitch artist, how do you present ideas? The executive debater, standing up for your ideas. The inspiring others, talking with influence. And then truth to power. And I kind of see the truth to power as the one fitting into that scenario where you're having to bring up the inconvenient facts of a situation, what might be hopefully the inconvenient truth, and engage in that unpopular message. So if you could help us in that setting figure out what to do, that would be wonderful.
I think the first thing to say is that managing your state in any situation where you have to speak truth to power is really crucial, because we are mammals, you know, and we tune into adrenaline very quickly. And the thing with senior people, senior managers, is I often say this to clients: if you imagine running a company where you employ 60,000 people, and one of those 60,000 people is telling you that there's something wrong in the data, there's something that you need to look at, mm-hmm. you need to really trust that that person is right. Because if they're not right, if they come across without compelling power, you're going to swat them away because you don't have enough space in your brain. So when you present some kind of truth to power, you need to make sure that you're incredibly grounded, incredibly concise, that you're really listening to the other person, because we're much more likely to listen to someone else if they've previously listened to us. So to any product manager who's going into that kind of meeting, I would say take a bit of time out. Think about the stakeholders' perspective. Think about how they see you. Think about what the common purpose is of this meeting, of this business, of your function. And before you go into that meeting, have a really clear sense of what's in it for them. And as you sit in the meeting, really listen. Don't be planning what you're going to say. You should already have done that. Really tune into what they're saying. And before you speak your truth to power, make sure that you are using the language that they've already used in that meeting. So start to echo some of the phrases. Because when we use a kind of verbal rapport, when we're dancing with someone else, when we're showing that we're in sync, that we've been listening, they're much more likely to pay attention. It's the classic yes and or yes but, which you might have come across from improvisation. In improvisation, the cardinal sin is to say yes, but, because that breaks the channel of communication. It kills off any co-creation. Whereas if you say yes and, you're accepting that someone else has an opinion and you're building on it, you're co-creating. And co-creation is a much more effective way to speak truth to power.
Yeah, I love that yes and approach. I took my first improv course just a couple months ago, right? It's on my list of personal development, and thought, okay, this is reaching outside my normal bounds because I have no kind of acting background, but thought this would be useful to help maybe build up this gravitas a little bit. It's just the ability to think more quickly on your feet. And I love those exercises where you're trying to keep the story going and you respond with the yes and. And in meetings where we're trying to brainstorm and build upon each other's ideas, this is where it's really useful too, to say yes and how can we make that better. Earlier this year too, I was getting through, now I'm going to draw a blank on his name, Ed, someone, the co-founder with Steve Jobs of Pixar. And they had this system, same thing, they just called it plussing, right? That's a great idea, and pluss it, just make it better. And they said, you know, we might literally plus an idea 1,000 times to get it until it's something that's really, really good.
It's chipping away, isn't it? It's the refinements rather than kind of killing something stone dead.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So understanding the stakeholder's perspective, what is in it for them, and talking in their language. And talking in their language is something else as product managers that we hopefully are reasonable at, because when it comes to understanding customers' problems for products that we build for them to create value for them, we want to get our inspiration from their actual language and use that later too in some of the marketing communications for the product, and try to just be, like you said, in sync on the same message. You use dancing as a metaphor. I found that curious. Can you talk more about that?
I suppose where that comes from is neuro-linguistic programming, and I'm sure some of your audience have come across, have you heard of neuro-linguistic programming? I'm sure. And dancing is a metaphor that NLP uses a lot for rapport. And it's the idea that when we're in sync with someone, we are in rhythm. And you can be in physical rhythm. You can be, you know, in breathing rhythm. When we're really in sync, our breathing is synced. And in linguistic terms, we can be in verbal sync. And so it's you know how with a friend you kind of echo expressions, and you have a similar pace and you have a similar use of vocabulary, you want to make sure that you're also doing that in a different way with a senior manager. That if they say, you know, the key indicators for success in this project are, you know, boosted profits, staff morale, and a great sales, uh-huh, you might echo three of those phrases when you talk about it.
And just be in sync with them to say that back. So understanding the stakeholder's perspective, you talked about kind of earning the right to speak also, right? So how does that person think about you? And in one of my hats is teaching graduate courses, and we'll have MBA students who will have these incredible experiences going throughout their MBA work. And now they believe they're ready to go fix all the wrongs in corporate America. And sometimes I have to share messages kind of like this to rein them in a little bit and say, you know, first, understand the culture, understand what's important, and you have to earn the right to offer your ideas or no one's going to pay any attention to them. How does one go about earning that right when you talked about, you know, the person has to be willing to listen to you?
Ooh, I think the key answer to that is know your zone of expertise. And I think as we become older and more expert, actually the zone of expertise shrinks in a weird way, mm-hmm, because we know what we don't know.
Right.
So know what you, there's something quite ancient about it. Know what you know what you don't, and know the difference. And I think the first thing is to really honor what someone else knows, mm, and be really humble in the face of someone else's expertise. And then to have a really clear sense of what's the common purpose here, what is trying to happen here, where does my expertise give a value that other people don't see? Where does my expertise point out something that others might be blind to? Because although we want to have the yes and principle alive, we also want to make sure that we're not in groupthink. And I think if you're clear on the common purpose and you're clear on the other people's zone of expertise and you know where your zone of expertise starts, you can add value in your zone of expertise.
So playing to your expertise, there's some other advice I've shared with new product managers to organizations, and I think this works for any role too, but product managers tend to be kind of unique in that they have to work so cross-functionally, right? They're not just in their one function, but they have to work across the organization. And that advice is, I just say, you know, go have lunch with someone in another function. If you want to learn more about what the organization is doing in sales or in marketing or in manufacturing, invite someone to lunch and just listen.
Exactly.
And I think that's another helpful way to build up your influence over time also, because now you have people that you can point to maybe help reinforce the message you're trying to deliver.
Being curious about other people, being fascinated is such a compelling, influential frame of mind. Mm-hmm. And when you see someone who is not listening, you see someone who is not influential.
That never happens in a meeting when someone has their phone out.
never ever. I mean, I tell you what, if I had any control in a large business, I would ensure that in every meeting all phones were switched off. Mm-hmm. You know, back to pen and paper, because even if people are taking notes, it takes their focus away. It feels disrespectful, but I know in tech it's very, very difficult to get people to get rid of their phones.
Yeah, but I have been hearing some guidelines like that though, right? If you're going to take time for the meeting, you need to be present and contribute. Okay, so this was kind of all around, and I'll call it a step. I don't know if it's an actual step or not, but the step of kind of being able to get in sync with the person you're trying to influence. And if you're bringing truth to power to the conversation and entering into that potentially uncomfortable discussion where you're having an opposing perspective to share, to get in sync with them and use the yes and kind of approach, and then try to incorporate in your language some of the key aspects, you know, what is important to them. What other dimensions are important here about this truth to power, bringing gravitas to these sort of interactions?
I think what's really important in any interaction where you're dealing with senior managers is not to take it personally, not to take what you get back personally. Because if we go back to that thing of you're dealing with someone who's running a big company or maybe a division of a big company, you might get a slightly aggressive, critical response. I think the danger is that you take it really personally. it's really important just to remember what that person might have been dealing with in the day, and that the response they give you may not actually be about you. Hmm. And so there's something about it, it's what salespeople have to learn, which is, you know, you go into a sales situation, whatever happens in that situation, your confidence level stays at 10. And I think that's also true of speaking truth to power. What you say may not land. It may not have the impact you want. It may get an aggressive response. It's about protecting yourself. Keep grounded, feet on floor, bottom on chair. Keep breathing. Keep your own state calm and relaxed. And just notice the response you get. Be curious about it, but don't take it personally. Because if we go out of the meeting and think, that didn't go badly, they didn't like what I said, then we're silenced effectively. And that's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when groupthink really starts to happen.
So in situations where I've seen product managers either having to pitch an idea at a meeting or counter what might be at the moment, the popular thinking on an idea, you know, they're usually equipped with the information, you know, that they have the story together. They may not have thought about putting the story in terms of the language of their listener. So that's a really important step to get to. But the other aspect is, you mentioned being grounded, right? The state of the person and their breathing. And, you know, just our physical nature seems to come into this. And in some of these interactions, I've seen the person lose, and I've been in the share some of the time, you know, lose credibility simply because I'm getting nervous. We'll call it Bob, so it's not so personal. You know, Bob's getting nervous here and fumbling through words a little bit, and breathing has gotten awkward, and the words aren't coming out as Bob really needs them to be. How do you stay calm in that situation, or how do you just slow yourself down and be present and keep your state calm?
So there are three things. There's what you do before the meeting.
Okay.
What you do as you listen to others in the meeting before you speak, and then what you do when you speak. What to do before the meeting, I mean, I think the best advice of all is book out half an hour before the meeting if you can. If you can control your diary, book a meeting with yourself half an hour before that big senior stakeholder meeting.
And because, for all of us in the States, a diary is your schedule.
Yes. Sorry. Translation.
We do have people listening across the world, but I just want to make sure that we are on the same page.
Yes, it's very important. So make sure your schedule is booked out and that you have time to get grounded and centered. Actors call this the half. Before an actor goes on stage, the stage manager counts them down. This is your half hour call. You know, this is your 15 minute call, your 10 minute call, your 5 minute call. Beginners, please. And what that's doing is giving them a space to get present and quiet and calm so that they can listen to the other actors on stage and be present. Uh-huh. Now, we rush from meeting to meeting or call to call. We answer emails when we're sitting in reception. You know, we're still thinking about the last email when we walk into the meeting. It's no wonder that we lack presence in that situation. If people want presence, if they want impact, then it's really important to prepare your body as well as your content. And simply thinking feet on floor, so you could be sitting outside the meeting, waiting for others to come in, feet on floor, bottom on chair, really get grounded. Turn off your phone, devil's advocate, and feel, just notice the breath coming in. The breath's coming in, it's going out. You can feel the air on your face. You can feel the clothes on your skin. All of that is just making you more present. And people who are present have more presence.
I think that's really constructive feedback to be thinking about the moment. And it reminds me, just before our time together doing this interview, I was looking through my email, because I do that typically before an interview to make sure my guest hasn't emailed me to say, you know, something has come up and need to make a change. And I saw a message go by that I have been looking for, but it's also a message that might change my attitude. Okay, so I thought, okay, I'm going to wait and look at that later, because I want to make sure I am engaged with you right now and thinking not about that other thing, right?
Precisely.
And
that's
moving,
great.
Yeah, moving those distractions away so you can focus on how you want to be in that meeting.
And there's a lovely little kind of reminder for this, which is intention, attention, result. Set an intention for the meeting. pay attention to your state. And then when you get into the meeting, so stage two, notice the state of other people in the room, and that will give you the result that you want. We often set the intention and then we forget the attention. And that's where the result doesn't go the way we want it to.
So good information on getting grounded before the meeting and then in the meeting itself.
In the meeting itself, you already have a plan. You know what the purpose of the meeting is. You know what you want to say. So you've prepped your content. That's my presupposition here. Uh-huh. With your content prepped, once you're in the meeting, you very simply just listen. You contribute where required. And when you're not contributing verbally, you are really paying attention. So the least influential people are the ones who aren't listening. They're checking their phone most of the way through the meeting, and then they pipe up with what they plan to say, which probably repeats what someone else has already said. It's deeply uninfluential. What the really influential people listen really deeply and layer, which is back to the yes and layer onto what other people have said. And they are not just listening because they want to have more influence. They're listening because they're genuinely interested in what others have to say.
Yeah. So there's some objective for getting together in the first place. And what are the outcomes we're trying to get to? And just listen is good advice, and I think hard for a lot of people, especially if we have an agenda in our head that we know there's the situation. I need to convince my manager or the senior leader of the company that their position is not accurate, right? And that we have new information. And I'm probably focused on this, I got to get my plan executed. And instead of pull back from that and just listen and get the context and try to make connections then with what you're hearing and the information you have to bring.
It's a very global kind of listening. That first listening is a much more ego listening. What do I need to happen here? And it's when we're a bit adrenal and stressed and we've maybe had too much coffee. Mm. It's often the case. That second kind of listening is very global, as you say. And a good question is, what is trying to happen here? Or what's the common purpose? Mm-hmm. And that takes you beyond your own ego and helps you get into the more global issues in the room. And that's where the influence is.
So we prepped for the meeting. We got ourselves grounded. We're preparing ourselves to hopefully not overwhelm with our own ego. We're there for the common purpose. And we get to the meeting and we're listening. We're trying to keep the perspective of what we need to accomplish and what we're doing as a whole. And then you said there's an after meeting also step.
Oh, and there's one little step before that. So there's what you do before the meeting. There's how you're listening in the meeting. And then there's actually how you speak.
Okay.
And one of the things that's really important to do when you speak is, it's hard to do this on audio, but what most people do is they do a quick breath in through their mouth and then they speak really, really fast. And what I want to encourage your listeners to do is before you speak, just be conscious of breathing out, wait for the breath in, and then speak, because that gives you a nice, relaxed, diaphragmatic breath, which makes your voice more powerful. And it also allows you to feel more centered. It's what I call the pilot of the plane voice. You know, that kind of low, slow, impactful, listen to me guys voice. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do because we are nervous about speaking up. But it's like an actor learns to use their voice diaphragmatically. It's really important that people speaking in meetings speak with power, because if you're not speaking with power, they're not going to listen, and someone else is going to talk over you, and then someone else will say your idea 5 minutes later and everybody will go, that's great. So breathe out, wait for the breath in, then speak. And another little tip is always speak. Imagine speaking to the back wall in the room. So if you're sitting one side of a big table, imagine sending your voice to the opposite wall above the heads of the people that you're talking to. Because that just gives your voice a little bit of extra power. Uh-huh. And it's not shouting. Shouting is when you're forcing it from the larynx. Sending it across the room is just really using your full vocal power.
Right. It's the difference between when you're feeling tight in your throat and you know you're straining and you're speaking loudly, but just with power from the amount of air you're getting through your throat from your diaphragm.
Exactly. So it's vocal power is purely air coming out of the windpipe, hitting larynx and vibrating out into the room.
Okay.
And when we sit well, so sitting up straight, when we project our voices, that's when people listen to us, as long as we've got something good to say. And that's obviously just lots of hot air is not enough, unfortunately. But I trust that your listeners have good ideas, so we're fine.
That they do. That's what Everyday Innovators are all about. So identifying problems and bringing solutions to those problems. Okay, so that's good practical tip for the mechanics of just the breathing. And I think that does, it catches a lot of people off guard, that I know my own breathing does weird things when I'm feeling stressed in a meeting. And it's not smooth and natural anymore. And taking that time to breathe out, breath in, and then speak with power.
And a really neat little trick is also think about what's happening to the back ribs. So we're often sitting in high back chairs in meetings. I pity people who are in trendy kind of Google offices on beanbags or stools. That's much harder. But if you have a back to the chair, sit yourself right back, get your tailbone to the back of the chair, press your back ribs into the back of the chair. And as you wait, feel that you push your back ribs into the back of the chair as you breathe in.
Hmm.
And it just reminds us to breathe diaphragmatically.
Okay, so ribs are against the back of the chair.
And as you breathe in, the ribs push into the back of the chair. So if you think of the ribs as being like bucket handles, as we breathe in, the ribs open. And as they open, the back ribs push into the back of the chair.
Okay.
And then as we breathe out, the ribs move away. So if you keep thinking breath in, back of the chair, you get a nice diaphragmatic breath going as you're listening.
Very good. So, and listeners, if you could see me, I'm standing up doing this. I'm actually in a chair at the moment, but feeling the back of my ribs go in and out a little bit as they expand towards the sides of what a chair would be.
It's very good for us that they say that people who have heart attacks, if they learn to breathe diaphragmatically, are much more less likely to have the recurrence of a heart attack. Because it's a very good thing for the body to breathe diaphragmatically. It assists the heartbeat mm-hmm. and sorts of things.
Yeah, apparently, not my area at all. I just saw the stats that there's only two things we know right now that actually extend life. That's flossing, right? For whatever reason, flossing is supposed to add 6 years to your life, so we should all floss.
Wow, blimey.
And the other one is the volume of oxygen capacity you have in your lungs. And if you can increase that, that's supposed to add life too. So the things that Everyday Innovators learn about. So we got our meeting prep. We got our meeting. Anything else in the actual meeting we should talk about?
When someone is difficult or disagreeable, to have a sense of compassion for them. There's a lot of science about the power of compassion, and just channeling the sense of a feeling of compassion for that person will help you to listen better to them. And it might be wondering why it is that they're behaving in a stressed out way. It might be wondering where they've just come from. It might be wondering what pressures in the business are causing them to behave like this. Anything you can do to get yourself out of blame is going to make you more influential.
Good. Okay, now what happens after the meeting?
After the meeting, it's always, so this is something to be doing in the meeting that will help you afterwards. If you are able to record yourself subtly, that's a very, very useful thing to do. To hear ourselves as others hear us is powerful. If you can't record yourself, but you have someone that you trust to give you some good feedback, I think it's always really powerful to ask someone for congratulations and considerations. So the things you were doing well, and then the refinements.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important that they start with the things you were doing well, just for your sanity, and then just ask for a couple of things you could have done better. And with feedback, take what you want from it. Right. Sometimes it says more about the other person than you. So take what is helpful and, you know, discard what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Because feedback is only as useful as, you know, as we can use it.
Yeah, I think that's very wise advice. You know, because of our past experiences, we all have a different interaction with feedback, right? For some of us, any feedback is automatically negative just because of some past experiences. I regard feedback as a precious gift, that if someone is going to take time to, you know, even if they may have an alternative motive, if they're going to take time to speak something to me that I have an opportunity to evaluate, like you said, it's up for me to filter that myself. I can decide what is good in there and what isn't, and if there's anything that I can actually act on. So I always think of feedback as a gift, and most of us don't get that gift nearly enough.
And it's really helpful to prime that person before the meeting mm-hmm. to know that they're going to be giving you some feedback as well, because then they can really listen with a focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And not being on the phone all the time.
Exactly. One person will be listening to you. The meeting is already better.
Good. Well, I appreciate you walking through how we can bring this, the gravitas to the truth to power aspect of being able to be more present, defend ideas, challenge ideas that need challenging, and try to push things in a yes and sort of fashion, right? Making everything better.
Can I add one more thing?
Please.
Is that okay?
Yes, please do, Carol.
Posture. I'm currently leaning over my laptop, but if you can sit up straight, that will massively help your voice and presence. So simply sitting up straight, get yourself to Pilates class, whatever it is, go to yoga, practice Alexander technique, do Kung Fu, do something that helps your posture, and then carry yourself with authority. Mm-hmm. Because there's lots of research on the power of body language to communicate presence.
Right. And I'm sure you've seen the TED Talk, and I don't remember the woman's name that did it, about the how body positions actually stimulate and create chemicals in our brains. Because we knew the other was true, right? And then she did the work through MRIs to see what happens when we actually take powerful body positions, and they make our brains think that we're more powerful.
It's incredible. Amy Cuddy rocks. Yeah. So if anybody hasn't seen her TED Talk, Amy Cuddy's talk on presence is incredible. Yeah.
Excellent. And a simple one for me in meetings, back in the days when I was regularly wearing a sports coat, maybe no one does these things much anymore, but there's still some settings where you have a suit coat or a sports coat on, right? It's really hard to look good in a sports coat sitting down, right? They're not meant for that. And the old trick from newscasters and television anchors is to, just scoot up a little bit, pull the back of the tails down underneath you, and then sit down. It just makes everything look cleaner, and I always felt better that way, right? The coat wasn't doing funny things, and I felt better when my sports coat was straightened properly.
It's all important, and it probably straightens your spine as well, because there's a consciousness of how you're showing up. So all of these little things can really make a difference.
Yeah, and a lot of that's just being self-aware about what matters to you and what doesn't.
Exactly.
And being aware of what's being discussed in the room, too. Okay, these are very helpful points. I also want to make sure I ask you for your innovation quote, as I ask all of my guests to bring. Can you share that and tell us why you chose that one?
So the quote I love is by Fritz Perls, who was the founder of Gestalt Therapy, and it's "Fear is excitement without the breath." Which, yeah, for that's pretty much an actor's training. That's what an actor's training is all about.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of the battle is just recognizing that this isn't natural for most people. Most of us are fearful when we have to speak in front of others, especially about something that might be considered argumentative and enter those conversations. So fear is excitement without the breath. That's a pretty deep sort of statement in a few words.
And I think my work, that sounds very grandiose, but my life's work, personally, my own journey is about how an introvert can step into the spotlight and still feel calm and confident. Mm-hmm. And for many, many years, when I spoke on stage as an actor in training, I was told my voice was thin, I didn't have enough presence, I wasn't grounded enough. And I didn't really understand why people were saying that. And what they were really saying was that I was in my head. I was too intellectual about things. And so over the last 20 years, I've learned to be more in the body, to be more present to what my body is doing when I'm on stage, when I'm talking. Mm-hmm. And that whole journey is about understanding that when we want to influence, when we want to speak powerfully, it's not just about what the brain is doing. It's massively about what the body is doing. So if we want to impact or influence an audience, it's really important that we prepare the physical state as well as the intellectual state. And that quote captures the bridge between the two states.
And these two need to be in sync.
It's so important.
Thanks for bringing that and sharing it with us. I know there's so much more detail in the book that you wrote too about Gravitas. And how can people just find out about the work that you've done and learn more about this?
Well, we have a site which is gravitasmethod.com, gravitasmethod.com. Mm-hmm. Or people can find me on amazon.com. The book Gravitas is on Amazon. Or I'm also on Twitter at Caroline Goyder, which is G-O-Y-D-E-R.
Very good. And I will make sure all those links make it into the show notes too, to make it easy for everyday innovators to find that information. It was a personal delight for me to just find out about your work and learn about more about that. And do you offer personal coaching? Because I'm asking for myself as much as anyone listening. This is an area that I think everyone can develop better skills in. And that, you know, like I just said, oh, and I'm thinking about that now, right? That there's voice control and presence that is beneficial to our careers, regardless of what that is. So do you offer personal coaching also?
Yes. Interestingly, I have an increasing number of clients in the US, actually. So we Skype. And it's a way I really like to work these days. We're becoming much more open to Skype. And I think it's quite a powerful way to work. In fact, when I worked on my TEDx, I had a very good coach in Washington, D.C. So it's gone both ways across the Atlantic.
Across the pond there. Caroline, thank you so much for your time and for joining the Everyday Innovators.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Chad.
Thank you for listening. When you go to the show notes at theeverydayinnovator.com/099 for the free courses that Caroline is making available, you're also going to find how you can share this episode on your favorite social media sites. Just click on the links at the top of the show notes. I really appreciate you doing that. Also, from the same page, you can download the Product Mastery Roadmap. It shows you how to go from product manager to product master. Find it all at theeverydayinnovator.com/099. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.